starting in Psalm 122. Tonight, if you want to get your Bibles ready, Psalm 122. Glad you're here. As I already mentioned, there's been such good attendance this week. And let's just take this time before we start, since it is our last time together, to show you tell you how much me and Carlos just appreciate all that's happened this week. I do appreciate your presence, and you think, well, that's what's supposed to happen. Well, that may be so, but it still shows that there's effort being made. And many of you with small children that have brought them every night, it shows how much you love God. It shows how much you care about spiritual things. It's just such an encouraging thing, and I'm so appreciative of that. The visitors that we've had every single night, that didn't just happen. They weren't driving down the road and see a bunch of cars and decide to come in and see what the hubbub's about. No, they were here because you let them know what was going on. You invited people and you let people know and you made them aware. So appreciate so much that you've been so kind and encouraging to us. It's just you built us up so much. And Larry and the Smiths, that just treat us like kings. And we are not kings, but they have treated us that way. It's just been so humbling to be treated like we have. We've eaten so much that we're just about sick. We're not used to eating like this. But you've done so much to show your kindness, and we appreciate that so much. But the biggest thing I want to thank you for is giving me the chance to preach here every night this week. I appreciate that so much. There's a lot of good speakers around, and there's a lot of people you could have invited and You asked me to come, and so I can't pay you back for that. I can't do anything to, other than to tell you how much I appreciate it. That's about all I can do. And I don't know if it's so. I'm really, really humbled and appreciative that you've asked us to be here. Things we've seen this week, there's obviously a close group here. You love each other, and you're close to one another, and there's peace here, and you would like to think that that's a given, but you know better than that. Peace is not a given. But so I'm so thankful for the love and the closeness that you guys have here for each other. You have an appreciation for truth. You have an appreciation for the teaching of it, and that comes out so much, and I'm thankful for that. I'm thankful for all the acts of the providence, all the innumerable acts of providence that brought the Hammonds family here. I know why you love them. Carl and I have fallen in love with them this week. I'm just so thankful for all the good that's happening, and I just want to encourage you to keep on. Grow. And work and stretch yourself and do things that you might not think you can do. There are, every night we've had this week, every service has been a different song leader. You can be one of them too. I don't know who all teaches Bible classes here, but you can be one of them too. You can be one back in the foyer greeting visitors. You can do something, probably more than what you are doing. So wear yourself out. We serve a wonderful God. But the point is, we serve. So do it. And do it the best that you can. That's kind of what we're going to be talking about tonight for those visiting with us. We've been looking all night, all week long, it's just various things about how we can more properly approach our role as servants. We're going to talk tonight about proper motivation. Not exactly maybe the best of topics, best of introductions in what's almost July. But we're all familiar with the January, what are they called? The resolutions. The New Year's resolutions that have almost become nothing more than a caricature of themselves. We make these resolutions knowing very well we're probably not going to keep them. And everybody we tell them to knows we're probably not going to keep them. They just become almost a joke. But I don't guess there's any of those so-called resolutions that fly by the wayside any faster than exercise. I'm going to start exercising. And maybe 3 days, we keep it up. But it doesn't take long till that's in the rearview mirror. So far in behind that we forgot we ever made the resolution to begin with. There's a lot of reasons. There are a lot of motivational reasons why some people begin to exercise. Some of them are athletic purposes. There's a game. You are a part of a team, and there is some training that's taking place. Or you're working your way up to a 5K or a half marathon or whatever. Sometimes we are exercising because there is something tangible that we are actually working toward. That motivates a lot of people to exercise. For some, it's health. Maybe because of family history, or maybe because of just some health issues that we've got. Maybe doctors get involved. And exercise, it almost becomes like taking a pill.
There are people here who have gone through some intense treatments. As a matter of fact, they're still undergoing intense treatments. It's not that you like them. It's not because you like how that pill makes you feel or how that treatment makes you feel, but you understand it's for my good. And there's a lot of people who exercise for that very reason. They don't like it. They don't enjoy it, but they just, like a pill, they take it for health purposes. They do it for health purposes. Some do it because they want to lose some weight. Maybe there's a wedding coming up, and I have got to get into this size, whatever dress. So I'm going to exercise for that event. That's some people's motivation. Let's just be clear, and let's be blunt. For some people, it's vanity, which is what we want. It's all about the looks. But here's the point. What if all of those motivating factors disappeared? The health gets under control. You're no longer on that ball team where workouts are kind of mandatory and organized, and that's over with, done. Maybe the wedding has already come and gone. You've already got the dress on. You've already got all the pictures made. And an example was there's a professional baseball player who has since died. But back in the late 80s, mid to late 80s, early 90s, early to mid 90s, we're the best in the game. He was a first ballot Hall of Famer, couple times MVP, two-time World Series champion. He was the MVP of those World Series both times. Had a really bad, almost overnight, he woke up and had lost almost all vision in one of his eyes. He had to take a retirement that he was not ready for, but he was forced into that. And he just kind of dropped off the map. You didn't see him anymore. And 5 years later, once the mandatory wait had happened, he's a first ballot Hall of Famer. So I saw him at the end. I wasn't there, I watched it on TV, but I saw him for the first time in 5 years. He looked like a bowling ball. He had gained so much weight. He was as wide as he was tall. And what became really, really apparent is, if he didn't have to work out, he certainly didn't work out. Evidently the most workout he had done in 5 years was just from the bowl to the mouth. And I'm using that as an example. What if whatever those motivating factors are, what if for us they just kind of fade away? Then we're going to stop exercising. And then there are people whose motivation is they enjoy it. And I know some people think here, no, nobody enjoys it. Oh, yeah, they do. And in a room like this with this many people, there are people here who understand that concept. Some people exercise because they like it. It's not a burden. You don't have to drag them. There are people that if they don't get to do at least something every day that's going to cause them to sweat, they just kind of, it's almost a waste of day. And you know people like that. You know what happens with them? They keep it up. They don't have all these external things that can come and go. Those are the ones who will persevere. And they'll keep doing it. Now, you've been really patient in that long-winded introduction. But, you know, there are a lot of spiritual motivations that are just as haphazard. There are people who will probably be here in a few days. They'll probably be here Sunday morning. May even be here right now. And they're here because this is what mom and daddy's told them to do. This is where mom and daddy went. This is what we do. But they don't love it. There's no joy. There's no excitement. There's no love. They're here because they're just punching the time clock. You can put names to that. There are people who worshipped and worshipped for a long time. They've assembled for a long time. And it was for no other reason than to please a girl or to please a boy. There are people who have worshipped and they've worshipped for a long time. And it was about nothing but just potential business acquaintances. There are people who have worshipped, and they've worshipped a long time, and it was about nothing but social functions. Noah, I know a man preaches farther up north from here, and there was a visitor with him. Came one Sunday morning. As he was walking out the door, he said, "Nice to meet you. Glad you came. Hope you come back." And he said, "Well, I probably won't. I'm looking for a church with a basketball team. I bought it. This is what I'm looking for." There are some who, it's just about the social stuff. I'm not making that up, and you know I'm not. That we can put names to all of that. But are you with me in the 122nd Psalm? Proper motivation, all those things can end. And it leads to this question, Psalm 122 verse 1, "I was glad when they said to me, let me go to the house of the Lord." It is a fair question to ask. With all those things we have done, with all those worship services we have attended, all the Bible studies we have attended, it is not wrong to ask the question, did we ever love God? Did we do that with joy? Can we copy this psalm and say it was a wonderful day? What a wonderful, I'm so thankful that I got to go, because those are the ones that'll persevere. If we ever wonder why so-and-so fell away, or they're not as faithful as they used to be, or they've just kind of gotten off track, and was our joy ever there? Was that ever the driving force? Because sometimes the driving force is just habit. Sometimes the driving force is family things. Sometimes the driving force is a million things. But those million things can disappear. They can just kind of fade away. And you know what happens? If that's our motivation, we may fade away right along with them. We want proper motivation for our service. And this is it. This is what will drive us through the pain and the disappointment and all those things that happen when we just say, "I do not understand it." This is what can keep us. Turn to Hosea chapter 1. Hosea 1. Just to emphasize that this is not a new scenario. God's people have always struggled with this. And I said Hosea, I'm sorry, I'm putting you in the wrong place. Malachi chapter 1. You remember the days of Malachi? The priesthood has just become corrupt. And because they have been corrupted, the people have somewhat just followed their lead. And we get a really clear picture of how bad it was. But look at verse 13. We're not going to read the whole context. I want just a couple of verses. Look at verse 13. "You have said, behold, what a weariness it is." That's far enough. Just let that resonate. Oh, you want the sacrifices? Okay, we'll give you the sacrifice. Oh, you want some incense? Here's your incense. You want this? Here it is. Oh, are we done yet? Are you happy now? What a weariness it is. They were doing acts. They were doing the service. They were doing the stuff. And all they could think about was, when is this going to be over? So sick of this. So tired of this. Hurry up. What a weariness it is. You want to know how God felt about that? Look in verse 10. "Who is there, even among you, that would shut the doors?" God's view was, you know, I wish somebody down there loved me enough they would put a chain on the door and end all this nonsense. I would rather nothing go on than this trash. I would rather nothing be taking place than this. I wish somebody there would just shut the doors. Turn to Isaiah 43. We get another insight into this. Again, there's nothing new. Long before, Malachi is talking about this. Isaiah is talking about it. Isaiah 43. And look in verse 22. Isaiah 43, verse 22. You have not called upon me, O Jacob, but you have been weary of me. It's that same attitude. What a weariness. Oh, I'm so tired. Didn't we just do this? And aren't you ever happy? You're always wanting something else. You're always wanting more. I'm just tired of it. You know how God felt about that? Drop down to verse 24. This is God speaking through the prophet, but it's God's words. Look at verse 24. You have brought me no sweet cane with money. You have not filled me with the fat of sacrifices. You have made me to serve with your sins. You have wearied me. Oh, I make you sick. Well, let me tell you something. You make me sick. Oh, you're tired of this nonsense. Well, let me tell you something. I'm even more tired of it than you are. I can't stand what I see out of you. And so here's all this time, and they're thinking, oh, what a weariness this is. And here's God thinking the same thing about them. We got to be better than that. What we've got to understand is it's not enough to be here. It's not enough to say, I love you. It's not enough to say, what He wants is our hearts. We talked last night about the internal. We want to work inside out. We worry so much about the external stuff. If we never change the heart, then it's not properly motivated. And it will in due time fail. We've got to be better than this. We need motivating factors that time and circumstances will not change. And there are plenty of them. And that's what we want to do tonight. Very basic, very, very elementary. We're not going to look at anything new. But I just want to give you some reminders about some powerfully motivating things that can take us into eternity. The first one, let's talk about forgiveness. Look in Romans chapter 3. Romans 3. Again, we're going to look at some memory work tonight, memory verses. As we look at this, I want to just confess to you, this was a memory verse that I learned wrong. I don't know how I did it. I don't know if I heard it wrong, or if I don't know if it just came from somebody else helping me learn it wrong, or if I just did it wrong on myself, but I didn't learn it right. But it is a memory work. But look in Romans 3, verse 23. All have sinned and fall short of the glory of God. I don't know how I learned this wrong, but here's how I learned that verse. All have sinned and fallen short of the glory of God. I don't know how I learned. I do not know how that got in my head. But it got in and it stayed in a long time, and that's just what rolled off my tongue when I did my memory work. But it is not what it said. It's not the point that's being made. It's talking in two different tenses. Look at verse 23. For all have sinned. There's your past tense. And fall short. That's present. And that's me and you. There are times in the past when we missed the mark. We fell short. And to our shame, and because we are frail, and because sometimes temptation gets the best of us, we're continuing to do that. And there's no exception being made here. All have sinned, past tense, and fall short of the glory of God. That's me, and that's you. Do you remember what we did a couple nights ago? Now turn over a few pages to Romans 6. And let's finish up what we started the other night. I don't know if you ever caught that. We didn't finish this. Tonight we finish it. All have sinned and fall short of the glory of God. That's a statement of truism. The wages of sin is death. We talked about that. We talked about what wages are. They are what we have worked for. They are what we have earned. And when me and you sinned, and we have all done it, when me and you sinned, what we earned was spiritual death. The wages of sin is death. And if anyone wants to raise their hand and say, well, wait a minute. Now, but God doesn't hold us accountable for that, so that makes God not truthful, and God... The wages of sin is death. And Jesus died because of our sin. He paid the price. Somebody had to die because of my sin. It should have been me. That's just. Somebody had to die for your sin, because that's what the wages of sin is. Somebody's got to die. It should have been you. That's just the bluntness of it. And yet that we don't have to taste of it. We don't have to pay that cost. Forgiveness is possible. And that ought to motivate the fool out of us. Because we can't get it from any other source. Turn to Ephesians chapter 2. I hope that all of us have been raised so well and we have this sense of responsibility. And we feel the need to earn things. We don't. I'm guessing that every one of us here don't want anything to just be handed out. We want to earn what we get. We want to work for what we get. Make sure we understand. Forgiveness is not something we can earn. It's a gift. That verse that we didn't finish up. The wages of sin is death, but the gift of God is eternal life. The gift of God. And we need to be thankful for that. That ought to motivate us. This is a gift we can't earn. And even when the kids were young, as we try to teach them responsibility, and maybe that started out with, this costs $5. You've got $2. And maybe we just pay the rest. Or maybe they got this, and maybe that's happened with me and you. I know when you buy a house, maybe that happened with the bank. We make this little bit of a down payment, and then this others kick in for a while. And you know the song we sing? Jesus paid it all. Don't make the mistake of bringing that. I'll pay my part, and then somebody else can pick up the rest. Because I'm pretty faithful. And I'm pretty strong, and I fight temptation well, and I'm a little better than maybe some of these others are. So I'm not owed as much as them. Jesus paid it all. He had nothing to brag about, nothing to boast about, and that ought to motivate us. Are you in Ephesians chapter 2? Such a clear passage that emphasizes two things. It emphasizes what God and Jesus did. And it emphasizes why it had to be done. It emphasizes what they've done versus our failures. So let's just feast on it for just a minute. You, He has quickened. He has made alive. Because the wages of sin is death. But we're alive in Christ. How'd that happen? Because He gave us life. You, He has quickened who were dead in trespasses and sin. You know what it means to trespass? Of course you know what it means to trespass. We all say the signs, no trespassing. That means there are places I'm not supposed to go. If I come to a driveway and it says no trespassing, I'm not supposed to be there. We were dead in trespasses. We were places we didn't need to be. We were doing things we had no authority to do. We were dead in trespasses and sins, and yet He made us alive. Two things being emphasized. What they did versus what we did. Pick up in verse 2. In this time past, when we were dead in trespasses and sin, in this time past, you walked according to the course of the world, the course of this age, according to the prince of power of the air, the spirit that now works in the children of disobedience, of whom also we had all our lives in times past in the host of our flesh, fulfilling desires of the flesh and of the mind, and were by nature, by custom, children of wrath as others. He says there are worldly people in this world. And he says there was a time we were just like them. But he's talking past tense. He's talking about what we were. But this all got started. He has quickened us. He has made us alive. So now let's turn. It says, but. So everything's about to change. We were dead in sin. We were dead in trespasses. Like all the world around us, we were living according to our flesh. We were just like them. But God, who is rich in mercy, for His great love in which He loved us, even when we were dead in sin, quickened us together, gave us life together with Christ. By grace you're saved. And He has raised us up together and made us sit together in the heavenly places. What's being emphasized? What we did versus what God did. what we did versus what happened through Christ. We have been risen to a place of honor. The most clear section to me in this is in verse 12. At that time, at what time? At the time we were dead in trespasses and sin. At the time we were living according to the lust of the flesh. At that time, you were without Christ. Let's call that Christless. Being aliens from the commonwealth of Israel. Let's call that nationless. Strangers from the covenant of promise. Let's call it promiseless. Having no hope. What do you think we should call that? Without God in the world. That's what I was. And that's what you were. Godless. Hopeless. Nationless. Christless. That's what we were. But now, verse 13, in Christ Jesus, you that were afar off, speaking of the Gentile world, we're applying it to us as ourselves, you've been brought close by the blood of Christ. This whole section. Here's what we were. Lost in trespasses and sin. Living like a worldly being. Christless, godless, hopeless, promiseless, nationless. But we've been given life. We've been risen to a place of honor. We sit with the King. And in verse 13, we have been brought near. That ought to motivate us. Because there's no other source that can get rid of all that stuff. The less, the godless, the Christless, the nobody else can get that removed from us. So can we not appreciate what He has done and what He can do? That ought to motivate us. And that motivation ought to just carry us on. What about the salvation that was made note of there? Looking at Acts chapter 4. Salvation, just a typical basic definition. It means to preserve from loss or calamity. If we are saved at sea, if we're saved from a burning house, if we are saved from a car that's about to explode, it means to preserve from loss, to preserve from calamity. But we understand this is speaking in the spiritual sense here. And there's nowhere else to go. If being preserved from loss, if that has a nice ring to us, if being preserved from eternal calamity, if that has any kind of, if that's got a pull to us, there's no other place to go. Lord willing, Carl and I'll be driving home tomorrow, and if maybe we get hungry and we're looking for an exit, and maybe we get busy or I'm daydreaming and we go past the exit, you know what? There's another exit 5 miles down the road. I think we'll be okay. And if I miss that one, there's another one 8 miles down the road. I believe we can make it. There is no place else to go if salvation means anything to us. Look in verse 12. Speaking of Christ, the one that cornerstone that they rejected, he says there is salvation not found in any other. There is no other name under heaven given among men whereby we must be saved. There is no other source to go. Would that include Mary? Is that a name under heaven? Would that include Muhammad? Is that a name under heaven? Would that include Saint whoever? Is that a name under heaven? Yeah, it is. There is no other name under heaven by which salvation can come. That ought to motivate us. Because we've got nowhere else to go. Look at Hebrews chapter 5. Very similar passage. Now, if we miss the exit and we can't get to Burger King, that's okay because McDonald's is down the road. If we miss that one, that's okay because Arby's is down the road. There is no other place to go for this. Verse 9. Being made perfect, He became the author. He became the source of eternal salvation to all those that obey Him. if you're one who will who makes notes in the Bible, you might want to underline that last phrase. Because the first half, it sounds really, really good to us. There is salvation that has been authored. There is salvation that has been offered. But that last phrase is the kicker. To those that obey Him. This is not the invitation time. But would be wrong to not ask, are you obeying Him? Because salvation is linked to that. And this ought to motivate us. There is one source and one source only. And so this motivational factor, it should never cease. If our heart's right and we appreciate forgiveness and we appreciate salvation, if we appreciate heaven, look in Luke chapter 13. Heaven ought to motivate us. We talked a couple nights ago, I think it was Tuesday night, we talked about the contrast to this. We talked about hell and that it is real. And that we can be really flippant about it if we're not careful. Heaven is real. And it ought to motivate us. It ought to drive us for all those dealing with things here of a health issue. This world's not your home. For those in this room dealing with issues of family, things that just, you'd stand on your head the rest of your life if you could correct it and change it. But you can't. And this world's not your home. There's a place coming where the hurts and the disappointments and the discouragement, they are not there. That ought to motivate us because of who will be there. In Luke chapter 13, interesting statement is made where basically at judgment, when this separation is taking place, it's people witnessing their own expulsion. Look in verse 28. There will be weeping and gnashing of teeth when you see Abraham and you see Isaac and you see Jacob. You see all the prophets in the kingdom of heaven and you yourselves cast out. We're going to see this. We're going to witness this. Can you let our mind kind of wander just a little bit? Hell's a horrible place. And we talked the other day about all the descriptive phrases Jesus uses to make sure we get the image of how horrible it is. All there is a part of that weeping and gnashing of teeth. But do you think it might be at least a little bit true that the most miserable people in hell are going to be Christians who turn their back on salvation? They know what God wants of them. There was a time in their life they were doing it. Actively serving. Doing what they could. Nobody's perfect, but striving and working. And then life kind of got busy and life starts kicking us in the teeth and things aren't working out right and we kind of pull back a little bit and before you know it, we pull back a little bit more and before we know it, without us even really consciously do it, we're just gone. And now we'll spend an eternity in a devil's hell, knowing full well, I didn't have to be here. We don't lose the conscience in hell. Knowing full well we didn't have to be there. Heaven is a motivating factor, and it ought to get us. It's a motivation that should never end. If we'll just consider, the problem with all of these, this is not new stuff. The problem is we just get busy with life. And we get busy making bills. And we get busy doing this and doing this and doing this. And we just kind of live. But we stop living for God. We're trying to get that motivation back. What about just love and appreciation for all of this? After reading these verses, do we appreciate forgiveness tonight? Absolutely. All of us here are going to appreciate forgiveness tonight. The question is, are we going to appreciate tomorrow when we wake up and we get busy again? Do we appreciate salvation? Of course we do. The question is, are we going to appreciate it when life throws the next curveball at us? Turn to Romans chapter 5. 2 Timothy chapter 3 is this long list of just degenerate society. And in the middle of that is people that are not thankful. We think about murderers. We think about rapists. We think about adulterers. In the midst of all that horrible stuff, the unthankful are mentioned. Maybe we need to see this as God sees it. And there's a lot of things that can make us unthankful. Maybe our pride. How is it that tonight we're so conscious of God and His gifts? How is it that we can get kind of forgetful of that? Maybe our pride. Maybe we take a good look at our house, our car, our stuff, the zeros on the bank account, and we just, well, I'm pretty good, aren't I? Sometimes we are not as thankful as we aren't because we think a little more highly of ourselves. Maybe it's not that. Maybe it's just that we're not content. We're not thankful because we really don't think we've got what we earned. We've gotten a raw deal. Life's not treating me well. I deserve better than this. It's awful hard to be thankful when you're not content. Maybe that's a problem. Maybe the problem is that it's become expectation. We're not as thankful as we are because we have just become accustomed to some things and we expect it to be there and we expect it to always be there. But I doubt that's it. For the people in this room, when we go through those bouts where maybe we're not as thankful as we ought to be, it's probably because we're just not thinking of it. Tonight, we're thinking about it. But it's when life gets busy and the wheels get rolling and it just kind of gets... It's not that intellectually we don't understand that our blessings come from God. It's not that emotionally we don't understand that they came from God. It's just we don't consider it as deeply at sometimes as we ought to. But whatever they are, it's immaterial. Proper love and appreciation will motivate us because we understand it to be a gift. Look in Romans chapter 5. Let this motivate us, because all these gifts we've been talking about, we're not worthy of any of them. In verse 6, when we were yet without strength. So there's another without. Let's see, in times past we've been godless, we've been Christless, we've been promiseless, we've been hopeless. Now verse 5, we're strengthless. I don't even know if that's a word, but you understand what's being said. We don't have the strength to get ourselves out of this mess. When we were without strength, in due time Christ died for the ungodly. Do you know who the ungodly is in that verse? Me and you. We don't deserve any of this. We were ungodly. Verse 7. For a righteous man. But the context, what that's really been saying is a right man. Somebody who treats you right. They tell you they'll give you this much, and they give you that much. They give you what you have earned. They are just. They are fair. For a right man, one wouldn't die. Maybe for a good man, some would dare to. So there's the man that treats you right, and then there's the man that treats you good. He gives you what he says and then a little bit extra. He gives you a tip. You see the difference in the two? There's the one that does right, and then there's the one who does even above and beyond that. You know which one we were? Neither one. Those aren't talking about me and you. Here's where me and you come back into the story. Verse 8. But God commended His love toward us, and that while we were yet sinners, Christ died for us. There's me and you in this little scenario. We're not the right one. We're not the good one. We are the sinner. You just acknowledge what we were. And then you get to verse 9. Much more then, being now justified by His blood, we shall be saved from the wrath of God through Him. Tonight, in this room, can we not appreciate that? That me and you, the godless and the Christless and the hopeless and the... Can we not appreciate what He's done for us? What He's made available for us in the spiritual places? That close relationship that He's allowed to happen. That ought to properly motivate us. These things can carry us through. There might be a lot of reasons why you exercise. They can come and go. There might be a lot of reasons why you diet. They can come and go. There might be a lot of reasons why you get up at 6 o'clock every morning. They can come and they can go. These are some reasons why we could and should serve God the rest of our life. And they're motivating factors that your job can't, they don't have to affect it, and your health don't have to affect it, and whatever's going on in your family doesn't have to affect these factors. Get your songbooks out. We can't earn these things that we've talked about, but we don't have to stop trying. And so the invitation tonight is just to be motivated. As we leave here tonight, all of us with our struggles, all of us with our problems, all of us with our stuff, whatever the stuff is. But there are spiritual blessings that if we will let them, if we'll just be reminded of them in its most pure sense, they'll blow our mind. And I hope every last one of us more motivated to serve than when we got here. But now the invitation. If maybe some of this stuff tonight has kind of struck a chord, and maybe the conscience is alive and well and it's just kicking, let's fix it. It's nothing shameful in going to God and saying, I'm not what I need to be, but I'm going to be better, and I'm going to be better right now. Make that decision, and then let these things motivate us to be faithful to that decision. This is not a resolution. This is a decision. A decision to serve, and to serve in the best that we can. If you want the prayers of the brethren here, do it while we stand and sing.